All right, I might kick it off. I know it's a few minutes early, but we've got a full house here, so that's pretty good. Anyone go to the party last night? Wow, you must have drank a lot to turn up to an 8 o'clock session. Okay, so I have this talk that I have written called the A Modern Architecture Review. And I'm going to just go through a whole lot of the steps that I do when I go to a customer. Now, who was at my session the other morning? Yeah, another 8 o'clock session. All right, a lot of you. So there was this glimpse guy in the audience. Is he here? Okay, there he is. So I've changed my demo last night. And
thanks.
My pleasure.
No
yep. So I'm just going to tweet right now. I changed my demo. We are going to look at how good this glimpse thing is. All right? So we'll see how we go. Wish me luck. All right. Wish him luck. Okay. So obviously this is not a code base that I know, but it's a situation that we're often placed in. We've got to have a look and see what we think about these different things. So I'll switch back and... I've got to mention that this presentation is very fast and fluid, okay? So make sure that you know that it's very fast and fluid. Now, the way that this works, and I'll just tell you a little bit of history before I get into it, because it might help a little bit. It doesn't like me switching back and forth. This is going to be hard going. But that is the glimpse. Oh, it gets confused if I do that too fast. Okay. So this is the glimpse source code, which you can download freely from GitHub, okay? So he's put in a... when I go into companies, I don't know how many times that they are in a state of pain. You know, they not always. Sometimes people get you into just a checkup and see how is the health, but, you know, like most... most guys, we don't get checkups until we're, you know, nearly having a coronary. And often companies are only going to call in people to get an external review when, you know, when they're in a lot of pain. Now, that pain might be that they just really got to the point where they don't trust their developers, or they just think that their developers are good, but they just can't see problems and that type of thing. So it's pretty hard to do this. But we've got lots of tools here that can help us a little bit more than what we had in the past. So before I just jump into here, I want to tell you where I came from and why I even bothered writing this this session. And I've gone and taken a real document that... this was the last audit I did just before I went to Europe. And I did it with a guy called Eric Fan in our office. And I've just renamed the company to Northwind to just in case they wouldn't like it. But essentially, they got us in, and what they said is, this is what I want you to do. We want you to complete an independent audit. We want you to be completely unbiased. We'll give you access to everybody you want to speak to. Go and have a look at the source code and look at the architecture as well, and tell us what is wrong in this place. And essentially, the main things that we particularly want you to touch on is, why have we had these two major incidents of downtime? And how come it's taking them more than, you know, a year or two to get this big, well, I don't know if they call it a big system, but our new system into production. So they're encountering all these bits of pain. And this is pretty, these type of things are fairly consistent with what they'll ask. And so we take all that and we create a document and present it in a PowerPoint in this case. But the document goes with it. Now it's 4 days, so you get 4 days to have a look and see what you find. Now, obviously, you can't look at everything. And in this particular case, it's probably not a bad example to give you. Most of the time, you will find a lot of code problems, heaps. Now, not always. So this puts it in a little bit of context. I should close that thing. But this puts it in a little bit of context that it's not always, you know, even though you're asked to go and find out what the problem is, it's not always what they think it is. So in this case, the technology was pretty good. The guys knew what they were doing. The processes were bad, and the guys were not communicating very well at all. Okay, so put it in perspective, it's not always what you're going to see. And we just gave them a series of things that they should do, and then we went into more detail. So, you know, we looked through the systems, and I'll just try to pick up a few bits and pieces here. But And this is the technology. This is what the architecture looks like. So it looks like they've thought through this. It looks fairly logical. This is the other system and how that works, and that's all right. How do you start writing code? Well, they were actually storyboarding, so I got some examples, and one of the things that I thought was very interesting is what they did in the mock-up a year before and what they produced was identical. I couldn't believe that. So that was very interesting. Then we go through the code and we look at essentially what's going on here. And we'll talk about some of these tools. If I could just make, there's a few seats available. If you guys could shift along, there's a lot of guys just standing up in the back with nothing. So that would be really nice. Just squeeze all along if there's a spare seat next year. All right, thanks, guys. And there's some sitting room down here. There's soon to be a fire hazard. Make sure there's space for me to run out, okay? I'm going to be first. So when you look at these things, we will go through. But, you know, all you guys need to remember is green's pretty good, okay? Now, if you want to know a bit more than that, 60 to 100 is good, and 40 to 60 is a warning, and 20 to 40 is bad, all right? And basically, if it's under 20, you're friggin' bleeding, okay? And I'll be very interested to know if any of you are under 20. Goes through. So in this case, I'm telling you that the code was okay, and you could look through the code. And there were some session state bits, and the naming conventions looked like they got an access consultant to do it. Okay. And there were some locking problems and some bad exception handling, but nothing very bad. It was pretty bloody good. There's some problems with setting up environments. It would take them a couple of days to set up a new developer. So obviously lots of... Actually, it would take them more than a couple of days. And, you know, in terms of the Google page speed, it needed some improvement. Bits and pieces, and it goes on and on and on. Okay, so you've got the caching problems here. Lots of those type of things. So I'll leave that, and I'll come back to my presentation. So that gives you a bit of context of why I decided to write the session in the first place. All right. So the way I've divided this session up is into three parts. The first part is what are the very first things that I do when I go in, and hopefully some of those will make sense to you. Then I go through and I just look at some higher level tools to get a pretty broad, quick overview of it. And then there's all this manual checking you've got to do that there's no tools going to help you. Okay. So a little about me. I am the chief architect at SSW. We're a gold partner. I'm Microsoft Regional Director. And I am an ALM MVP, and that's my Twitter handle. Okay, so of all the things that I have, I got a new role this year, and that is, I am the soccer coach, and it's good being a soccer coach. I have introduced all the little kids, all my girls, both my girls are in the same team, so I've introduced the entire team to Scrum. I have, and you know, the parents are always amazed. Like, you know, half time we do a retrospective, and we go through each kid has to say, all right, so what was something that didn't go well, and what was something that went well, and we go through the whole thing. And what do we need to improve? It's pretty simple, but it works very effectively. All right, and I come from Sydney. All right, who else is from Sydney? Okay, good. All right, so. The first things to look out for, the first things I will start asking is a little bit about process. Now, be careful not to go down a rat hole here. Going down a rat hole means that we'll be talking for a lot of times about all this type of stuff. But I think it's good to say, all right, we're going to just talk about a few things about process, then we're going to dive in. So, I will say, one of the questions I like asking is, who's doing the UI, okay? Who's doing all the styles here for the WPF? Who's doing all the CSS? Put up your hand. Okay. And in the project, I will often tell you that I will say it's generally not a great idea. I notice a correlation. The guys that are doing the UI are often the guys that are saying, we're not ready for you to look at it. I know they've called you in to have a look. I don't want you to look at my source code. I already know what all the problems are. So I don't need some external guy telling me what the problems are. So I think that if the devs are stuck down in the UI, that you're in potential problems. So try to make sure it's someone's responsibility so the guys can really spend more time on it. Okay, who's doing Scrum here? Okay. Oh, can I get a show of hands? I just want to know the percentage. Okay, so we've got 70% of you guys doing Scrum. Who has a Scrum Master? Official Scrum Master. Okay, so you can see that that's definitely lower, probably 30%. So if you're doing Scrum, I think you're meant to have a Scrum Master. Who's got continuous integration is the next question. Okay, so that's probably 70% of the room. And I will tell you, one of the things I have noticed, and I'd love to be corrected if I'm wrong, I can't think of a client. You know when you go to a client, you implement these new things, but you come back and they stop doing them? In terms of continuous integration, I can't even think of a client where we implemented continuous integration and then they ditched it. Does anyone have any clients that had continuous integration, they ditched it, it was no good? So that's interesting. There's not a person here that has experienced that. So that basically tells me that continuous integration is pretty good. And for the percentage of the room that aren't doing it, you should be doing it. Okay, so here's the holy grail. Continuous deployment. I have my stuff, I check it in, it goes through all these gates and checks and gets rejected, or it goes through these things and gets passed and it's right onto the staging server. Who has continuous deployment to staging or test or something? Okay, that's great. So we've got maybe 20-25% of you guys. Who's got continuous deployment to production? Three. Aren't you at NAB?
Yeah.
So NAB, they just deploy the stuff to production. Wow. That's pretty awesome. I'm not with NAB, thank God. All right. Yeah, I've done a lot of work at CommBank, and they're a long way from continuous deployment. Okay, so, you know, you're not serious, are you?
We are.
Oh, shit. All right, who's the other guy? All right, where do you work?
A place called CargoWise.
CargoWise, oh, very good. Yep, know you guys. Right, so what you're describing at CargoWise isn't that every time I check in, the other people see the changes straight away.
No.
Okay, so that would...
But there's no intervention for it. After it goes through the gated processes, there's no intervention for it to migrate into.
Are you a rich client or web-based?
It's actually mainly the rich clients.
Right, okay. So that's... you can still do continuous deployment with, say, click once, that'd be friggin' annoying. It'd be like iTunes, you know? Yeah. Get an update every time you open it. It's going to be a lot more applicable to a web-based thing. Who's the other guy? There was one other. There's three of you. Yeah, where do you work?
GPS Australia.
GPS Australia?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Cool. All right. So the other thing that I say, and this is definitely not part of Scrum, but I'll say it anyway, is one of the things that I think, you know, Scrum says everything should be part of a team. Hey, guys, if you want, there's some seats on the floor. You can sit back. And there's two down here, so...
Three.
Okay, you guys could move along a little bit. No?
I can't see the
floor. Okay, these guys aren't team players, but there are three seats down here. Okay. All right. So one of the things, like, of course, Scrum is all about teams. And you guys should learn a bit of Scrum. It's quite good. And anybody can change anyone's code. But the only thing I generally don't approve is anybody can make schema changes. And the reason I say that is I know a lot of people will say, well, it goes from dev to test. And, you know, then before we go, we compare schemas and we check what changes are going to be made and we make sure that's done carefully. I just don't think you'll ever get to the... to euphoria of continuous deployment if you don't have a process where a schema change is already validated and put in. So I'm always saying that the guys can make SQL files, but they give it to a schema master who is the only person that checks in. All right, so the next thing is, are they on the latest version of VS? That's the first thing I'll ask. Of TFS, yes, yes, no, you know, why not? And then I'll say, all right, so I'll give you a gold star if you've got ReSharper and a series of add-ins, whatever add-ins you have, okay? I just want to know those types of things. And ideally, that stuff should be documented, okay, as a team. Now, of course, someone else can try some add-ins, but once, as a team, we agree, yeah, that's a good way, we all have the same one. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say, let's do a get latest and compile. And it is amazing how many times I take the source code from these serious companies and I can't compile it, okay? Other times there's logical reasons that I've got to follow 20 different steps of, you know, I've got to install this infragistics thing and I've got to add some key and I've got to do this and I've got to set this up and I've got to change some IIS configuration. There's so many things. So I don't care as long as they're documented, okay? Don't tell me what they are. I will read them. And I want it in the source code. Okay. Now, of course, a lot of devs will put text files. I think put a doc and then put some screen captures so I don't have to read anything. So I always call that underscore instructions compile. Okay, it's one of the rules on our website. And then you run the unit tests. Can you do that? And then hopefully I will see a series of tests fail at that point because there's other dependencies that are required. Now, I don't know what they might be. There might be web services or other databases to set up and things like that. So that's kind of at that stage what I expect to see, and we start going through this process. Then I check that the schema can be created in different ways and can be scripted with OSQL or CMD. We have a little DLL we use called SQL Deploy, but as long as that's automated, you could use DataDude in Visual Studio. Okay, and then I want to see, once I follow those steps, it's passed. And if you want a complete gold star, you set up a streamlined environment, and the things to check for, like in this case, in many cases, there's lots of reasons that you can't get these things up and running, and it gives the developer a terrible lot of pain. So I'm going to tell you that one thing you can do is you can set up a workstation automatically scripted. Now, I'm going to recommend scripted with PowerShell, and one of my good friends, Tatham Oddy, he recommends this a lot. I think he's blogged about it a bit. And basically, the goal should be that you, within 1 minute, you got the whole machine up and running. Okay? From beginning to end. And here is an example. This is just a PowerShell script run. And in this case, if I go and I want this project set up with all the complicated dependencies, I'll run it the first time and I'll see some errors. And it will say, well, in this case, you know, you haven't got your Azure environment run directory configured. You haven't got this thing. You haven't got this tool installed. You haven't got that thing. And that is what you'll see straight away. Now, if you want the script then to go ahead and try to install all these types of things, you would run that, see the dash fix at the top, and that would go through and install what it can. All right? All right, and obviously if you ran it a second time, less things are run because, you know, it's already installed certain things, all right? Okay. All right, so the next obvious thing is, what do I need to do if I just put an X in a file to get this thing deployed? What are all the steps? And this is fairly basic. You go through instructions deploy, and if I follow these steps in instructions deploy, I should be live. Okay, so obviously the better way of doing this is using PowerShell, and you have a few of these files. So I'd expect to see something like, you know, if it's complicated, there'll be a series of these different files. But that would be fairly vanilla what you would see. Fair enough? Who's at this stage where they've got all their deployment done with PowerShell? Okay, so we've got, you know, five maybe. Less than 10% of the room. All right. Okay. So, I have a colleague in Norway. He is pretty awesome, and I took a screen capture of the way he does his build. This is TFS Build, and he built his own little portal. And it's fairly much in English. You'll see that every time it goes into production, which is completely automated from checking in, you'll see it stamps it with a version number. You've got this portal so you can look at what's on test, what's on production, what's on mega test, whatever that is. I think that means serious staging or something. You can see in the last one that we've been, has gone live, which work items changed in the last one. You can see associated change sets there. And in this case, he's got all the files if you wanted to manually download them for some reason. I would tell you that is probably a sign of dysfunction. I'm not sure why you would need those files there, because that's on a web project. There's no good reason. But anyway, that's the type of concept. Okay, who would love something like that? All right. So we don't have anything like that, sorry. But you can go to the User Voice portal and vote for it. Okay. So I want to talk to you about the compile issue. And the compile issue, if I just give you a couple of examples, on our homepage, we've got a couple of these images. Can you see these images? And just, can you just think about what's involved in getting those images there and aligned? Like, there's a lot of, you know, F5-ing, going across, having a look, getting it, pull it back, change one thing, you know, this type of thing. So I want to show you something. You know how we probably all are separated into a few groups of how we compile. And anyway, it's three, isn't it? One and three? Oh, that's because this machine's fallen asleep, sorry. Okay, that'd be the reason. So you know how we start off and we start going F5, debugging? Who when they're making web changes, just presses F5 each time? Okay, can I just see you get a show of hands? So, well, I'll tell you the main things I can think of is there'd be start debugging, and then there's start without debugging when we can't stand the performance hit, and then you go over to just, well, I'll just keep an IE open, and I'll go build, and then I'll just keep an IE open, and I'll go control S and F5, and you know you do that so quick. So who's just doing F5 every time? Okay, so there's a few of you. Who always does it without debugging? Start without debugging. Okay, so there's a percentage of you. Who just keeps another IE window open, or Chrome window would be more appropriate, not for this conference, I mean. Who just builds an F5? Okay, so that's more than half the room. Who's got another technique? What? Firebug. Oh, yes, so you just do it all over there, yes. Any others? No? What? Attach process. Right, okay. Or hopefully you're not doing that all the time. Any others? Because there's a couple of guys in our office, and I would call them white robes, you know, because I always feel like they're so religious about so many of these issues, like even religious about how you compile. So they believe that you actually never actually compile. You just write a tiny little test and control S, and if that part, then you use testdriven.net, and you execute that one test. If that passed, that's it. And so they actually kind of avoid the whole compiling issue. Now, what I want to do is I want to show you something that's pretty amazing. And before I, if you come into tools, extensions, and updates, I'm not going to see this guy. How many people have heard of .NET Daemon? Three. All right, three. So the rest of you get the hottest tip of the conference, and we can leave right after this tip. This thing, I'll just try to show it to you. Oh, let me just get rid of all this stuff. I should have done this before. I will just close your eyes. Don't look, please. Okay, I'm just getting rid of this stuff. And, whoops. Okay, all right. So let me just try to, I'll just F5 this guy. And I'll put that over there and this over there. And we get this silly error. I'll just come here. Okay. There we go. We're waiting. You know how you have this wait and you do this type of stuff? Well, what I want you to be aware of is, see this .NET daemon thing? When you install this, you get these extra things. Okay? Now, this is... remember last year when I presented and you all booed about Redgate? So all those people that were complaining about paying $30 for that stupid little reflector thing, now you can't have this because they know who you are. All right? But for the rest of you, you just install this little add-on and you get these checkboxes. And it is the coolest thing you've ever seen. Just see, you probably can't even see. It goes so bloody fast, unfortunately. Oh. Are you kidding? It's not free. Didn't you learn from last year? Now, so, well, it's kind of free for a while if you keep it in the trial mode or something. Anyway, so what you'll notice when you install this thing is, So let me just do that again, because I'm with debugging at the moment, so that wasn't very smart. So I will come here with .NET, and I'll just start without debugging. So let's debug. Start without debugging, because obviously it can't while I'm debugging. That was pretty stupid. So what you'll see down in the bottom right of this window, can you see the green? That's the new thing, all right? And so when you come here and I start, see how it actually says... It's showing the green, but it's always... See how quickly it's keeping this project up to date? And it's pretty amazing. And so obviously, that's good when you're writing source code. You're always seeing, your code getting compiled in the background. It's all up to date. Look how fast that is. This is a real project. I just got one of the projects from the office, and it's a significant amount of stuff in there. This is a fairly... Now, I'm not going to tell you this is a complete panacea. It's not... zero time, but it's approaching zero. It's pretty close. I don't know if you guys are impressed by me. I didn't write it, but but impressed that I'm telling you. Like, it's. Let me just try to change something. Just because you're not really making much noise here, but whoops. Oops. Hold on. So I'll just come to this line, okay? Now, this is what I'd love. I'd love to be able to change those things and this change over there. Wouldn't you like that? Yes. Well, all you got to do is do two things. You got to come in here and check this enable browser reload thing, okay? Now, it's not very obvious that you can click anything. You just have to know to click there. Now, when you click that, the menu just closes, you know. I think it was done by a developer. But when you come back, there it is. It is there. So that is a developer finding a workaround for a checkbox. It's pretty cool. Now, when we come here and we type, it doesn't do anything. You've got to do one more step, okay? And you see this one? Enable live reload. So I'm just going to check that, all right? Now, the Glimpse guy, watch... Anthony van der Hoogenbogen?
Yeah.
Yes, all right. Anthony. All right. Oh, look at that. Look, did you actually see? All right. All right, that's enough. Thank you for coming. All right, so that's pretty... Who thinks that is the hottest thing they've ever seen? That is friggin' amazing. Why didn't they put that at the keynote? That's what I'd like to know. Anyway. All right. And you want to know something amazing? This thing has had more downloads than ReSharper. Go to the extension manager gallery thing. It's incredible. So I think it's like all of Europe are doing this and they haven't told anybody else. Because that's to overtake ReSharper is significant. Okay. So anyway... Moving along. I don't think I won't be able to better that demo, but never mind. We'll kick along. So I'll just come back to here, and I'll just so. Forget about all those things about, you know, start with debugging, without debugging, or just building and F5ing all the time, and just get this .NET daemon. And I want you to think about the pain that you get. You look at the page, you Alt-Tab to Visual Studio, you modify the file, you save, you F5, you know, you wait that 15 seconds, whatever it is, you change that URL, and you often get that crazy error with MVC. Then you hit F5, and then you wait 5 seconds, and then you go back and look at the page, and then you Alt-Tab to Visual Studio, and you go round this circle. Or you can just do stuff and just watch. It's pretty incredible. All right, so use that tool. Okay, be aware they point down to the bottom here. I'm not sure why they point down to the middle. It's over to the right. Okay, so, all right. The very next thing I would do, so I would take the source code. I can check, I can compile, I can check, I can deploy. So then the very next thing that I will do is I will actually look through just the project, you know, the project names. I have a pet thing that I like, and that's that they're grouped in folders like that. So you can see all the UI1s. This is just one from our office. But all the UI1s for this one was put under one called UI. And then you've got all number 4 business. They're all put there. Now, they've got numbers, so they sort in the order that you'd want to read them. And that would be kind of the first thing that I would do. Now, Mr. Audio Visual, where is he? Could I get a mic? Because I want to ask one of the guys in the audience some questions as I go. So, all right. So, do you mind answering a few questions as we go along? All right. Well, I'm going to ask them anyway. If you don't want to answer them, you cannot answer them. All right. So that's the very first thing I'm going to do. I've got this project, and I'll switch over to my computer now, and I've taken this thing of this Glimpse source code, and I've fired it up in here. I haven't made any modifications apart from just getting the thing loaded and having a look around. And this is the project names. All right, so this is kind of how this works. Actually, you've grouped them by virtual folder type thing.
Yeah. Yep. That's it.
Yep. So you're a fan of that?
Yeah, we've essentially just broken it up into the core projects and then the test projects.
So the core is this one?
Yeah.
Yep, okay. And there's lots of these projects in here. And then this is JavaScript and MVC3.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing I was complaining about the other day. Where's MVC4?
It's on its way.
Okay, good. And then you've got these tests and samples. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got many tests?
A lot of tests, yeah.
That's what everyone tells me until I have a look. All right. Okay, cool. Anyone got any questions on that? It's kind of like the next step. So I will actually just tell you what I'd normally do on another project, just to show you what Microsoft give you, because I'm going to show you a third-party tool, and I haven't looked at your project on this, and I want to show both. So this is just a normal, how would I describe it? This is like a normal CRUD type application. So the tool that you use is architecture. Now, do you ever use this architecture menu, sir?
No.
Okay. Do you own Ultimate?
Yes.
Okay, well then you're wasting your money. Okay. So why would you buy Ultimate and then not use any of the tools? It's like, I can't think of an analogy. Anyway, so it's like getting like a very pretty Barbie doll wife and not spending all your money. That's a terrible analogy, but anyway. So, I was running out of things to think of. Okay, I had this terrible incident in New Zealand. I just did this presentation in New Zealand, and the room, they actually gave me the arena, the big room, and which would have helped here, actually. Can you guys hear me out the back? Hello? Okay, good. So in New Zealand, the room was big and packed, and I asked a question, not like that, where I said, who's using IntelliTrace? One lady in the back corner, she's a long way away, puts a hand up and she says she's using it. And then I refrained from the sexist joke I was going to make, and Instead, I got onto the topic of Paul Henry, you know, that idiot from New Zealand who's come out. He's always on Media Watch. Every time I turn Media Watch on, this Kiwi idiot who keeps saying these stupid things on the breakfast show. Anyone know Paul Henry? Well, they all love him. And when I started saying that, they all were yelling out, oh, they shouldn't have chucked him out of the country. He's great. He's so funny. And then I said, how long have you been using IntelliTrace? Well, straight away, the big voice came out and I realized it wasn't a lady. And that didn't go down very well. I had the conference organizer speak to me. He thought I did it on purpose. It was an accident. Anyway, terrible. So I'm looking at a project I've never seen, and I come into here for the solution. I'm going to have a quick look at this. And this is pretty good. You get this in Visual Studio 2010 as well, so it's not brand new, but this has changed a bit. Also, if you don't know how to use it now, they've got these beautiful little videos that show up. So it's I find that awesome, all the little features. You know, I come over to the Team Explorer and I look at my work. I want to know how to use it. I click the little video and in a minute I know. So that's actually a little experiment, but I hope they keep that going. So this is going to analyze all the assemblies in my project, and I'll have a very quick idea about what's involved in here. Now, there's a couple of things that I will typically do. I will typically, you can see all this stuff, and I probably should hide all that, but this is representing this in a graphical view. Now, how many people use this tool already? Okay, so there's about 6 or 7 of you. I always get rid of externals because I didn't write externals and I don't want to know anything about it. It's all Microsoft stuff. So it's they made it hard to delete. So you just click delete on the keyboard. And then I will start, I will typically now delete like things if there's common and other things in here, like the utils, because I don't care about that stuff. It's called from everywhere. And I will often just start deleting all the tests. But some people care about how well their tests are written. So I'd start looking here. I'm actually looking here for the web DLL. And there's the web DLL. I wish it was showed bigger because there's quite a bit of stuff in I can't tell the difference of which one's which here. But the first thing I'm looking now for is there a test one for the web? And I can't actually see it. There is? Oh, yes, there it is. Okay, so that looks all right. And what's that thing calling? So I'd now get the business, if there is a business. And I wish I could just... You know how we've got search everywhere in Visual Studio 2012 now? I want search here where I can just type business and find it. There he is. Okay, there's business. And I'm looking for business tests. I'm going to get rid of this common. See, this common is called by everything. I'll kill this because I just want to look at what's here. Models. Now, models is another thing that everything calls, and I'm okay with that, so I'm just going to kill that one too. But before I kill that, I should just check if there's a models test. No, there doesn't look like there's a model. Oh, yes, there is. Yep, so there's a models test over there, and that's referencing the right project. It's also referencing business. Probably that's okay. So I'll kill that, and I'll kill models. Okay, and this style of manner, there's data access. Where's data access tests? Well, this is interesting. I've got data access test with no link. So I could have a look in here, and I will find that there's no code in here. There's just, he's good at just creating the... I've got this plan to write all the unit tests, but I haven't written any. Okay, so now I can look at the solution and think, this looks pretty good. It's organized, it's created all the right projects, it's got good intention. But you can see straight away, I've spotted a problem. At this point in time, I would now, in my case, I would always do this with Snagit. I'd copy that. I would now go over to Team Explorer, and I would then go into Work Items, and then I'd come in here, and this is connecting to TFS Preview. I will come in here, and you have to choose whether you consider that a task or a PBI. Okay? Now, for me, I don't know, who would go with task? Okay? Who would go with PBI? So we've got, most of the room hasn't got a clue. Okay, there was 50-50 chance there. So we got like 10 choose task and 20 choose backlog item. I'd choose backlog item. And So I'm getting a 5% response from you guys, but that's impressive. So anyway, we've got this, and that's what I would do. And so then I'd start, you know, architecture or whatever, you know. And so that's kind of the process I'd go. So I won't keep doing that, but you will see. I'll get rid of that test data access. That was the one I just complained about. These security tests. So there must be a security one here somewhere. There's a business test. So the business tests are good. And then there's what do we got here? Test integration. So some of this stuff I have no clue about what this stuff is, but there's the security one, and there's another problem. So I'd screenshot that because I got security tests and they're not testing this. Plus, I've got to ask myself, is this okay that security is called by web and data access? And in fact, I would have thought it would have been called by business. So I would probably query that, okay? It's probably fine. And I'll get rid of that. Well, there's another couple of work items I would say. Test integration. I would kind of, well, that's just testing that. It's not doing very much integration, but this stuff over here, I don't know what this work is. Okay, so there's some service probably here running and it's calling this and this. That looks clean. Except where's the test? Is this got a worker? Okay, so there's no test for that guy. Anyway, so I'd question that, but it looks like some service. This is common tests. All these things without relationships, they're problematic. So I'll just kill that. Business tests. So that's calling all these. That's okay. This one we looked at, and that was okay, and that was okay, and I don't know what that thing is. I'd ask what that is. But you got a bit of an idea. And in fact, you can see, well, I'll just ask you, who can see what the problem is here? Let me just make it bigger. Who can put your hand up if you see the problem? Stand up if you can't see the problem. All right. So we should never have the web calling data directly. It should always be going through business. That's a 101 thing, which at this point in time I would seriously... I would actually use the telephone at this point in time because we've got some bigger issues here if I'm noticing that. I'd want an explanation to that guy. All right. Anyway, that's that tool. Who thinks that's a great tool? All right, buy Ultimate. Okay. Now... I'm going to show you another tool, and it does some things not quite as well and some things better. And this time I'm going to do it on your Mr. Glimpse's one. Okay. So Mr. Glimpse, here we have Endepend, and I'm just going to come through here, and I'll start from the beginning because I've already actually run this, and I just want to show you guys from the dead beginning, so there's nothing. So I'll just close that project. So when you install this Endepend product, you'll get that. That's what it looks like. And the very first thing you need to do, this is done, this is not a Microsoft tool, this is some third party by some guy in France, okay? This is a single dev in France. He must be frigging smart, and he is really French, I've spoken to him. the obnoxious French style guy? No. He's kind of nice, but, you know, every time I send him a suggestion, he says, not a very good suggestion. I think you have to get to know him. He's very brutal. Don't send him suggestions. Okay. So you come in here, and here is this thing. And what I have always done, I always select them all and press OK, which actually means next. But you know when he told me something the other day. Why do you always do that? Because don't you know that it scans them all? No, I didn't know, because that's why I do that. Yes. So I'm not sure why you select. The only reason this UI exists is in case I don't care about things. So it actually exists to remove, not to... They're all getting scanned. What that should say is scan in brackets 8 project, you know. Then I would have known. Anyway, so what a lot of people will do is they'll rip out all the tests because they don't want to scan their tests. And I'd be interested to know. How many people would want their tests to be of good quality too, or they're just worried about the architecture? So who cares only architecture? Okay, who cares about tests as well? Okay, so that's like 90% of the room care about tests as well. I will tell you that in reality, and I've seen most of the guys in our office run this style of things, they don't care about tests because it's a minefield just doing the other stuff. Anyway, you want me to run on your tests?
You might as well.
Okay, all right. Cool. So, there we go. I was going to run it anyway, so that's lucky you said that. All right. So, this will go through, and look, it does all these things. Like, this modal form, you can't do anything until... It's very annoying. I have asked him about that. He said it must be there and it must be modal and you mustn't be able to do anything else until you choose something. Okay, so I click this thing. I can't do anything. So I click that and you've got all these windows popping up and you've got this thing. So this thing, guys, even if you can just remember what I just did, this will be pretty impressive. So you can, you know, get this and, you know, show the boss what you've been working on. It looks like it's pretty... You can't do anything with it. It's just a light box, but it really looks impressive. That's your project, mate.
Wow.
So... Okay. Anyway, some of the other people are probably very impressed. Okay, that's your stuff. And I can tell you... there's lots of little bits in that music store. I can tell you that... And where's the big one? That thing there? Glimpse configuration? Is that big?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Okay. All right. So I can actually, that doesn't really. Anyway, you don't really use this apart from just showing off. Because
and I actually know how to read the previous. I've seen independent diagrams like it. I can never figure out what it means.
Yeah, I know you can't figure it out. But I thought you guys at the, bank were smart. Anyway, you know, you guys probably have like 1,000 licenses of this. Okay. All right. So, and the rest of them are just running crack versions. So, here we are. This will give me an idea. Now, don't worry too much, Stefan. This isn't meant to be understood. It's just meant to impress. So, what you'll find is you got this report. And you can actually get this report generated on the build process if you want. But there's lots of numbers here, like application metrics and things. Now, the interesting thing comes down here about... we've got problems in your, Mr. Glimpse, you've got problems. You've got some types that are too big. We've got some methods that are with too many parameters. That's actually critical, it says, and we'll need to look at that. Now, you won't use this thing at all. It's just quite nice to look at. Now, I wanted big red when there's an error, but I don't need green and... Well, I certainly don't need green and all these colours. But do not suggest to him to remove the green. He likes all the colours. Okay. So, but what we do have down here is you... Are you proud of your code?
For the most part, yep.
Okay. So I'm just going to tell you, this guy is actually very proud of his application. I'll tell you why he's proud of his application. Because to get the results, because this is all I really want to see at this point in time, I want to see his results... But I can't see them until I have to look at how clever he is with his query. So he insists on showing his query every time before you see the results. Okay. Now, there is kind of a good reason that he does that, kind of, because he's saying, look, you can customize this thing. But, you know, most people can, you know, we've got guys here from the bank, they can't read this stuff, you know. And they just want to know what's wrong. Okay. No, I'm being cruel. Okay, so we've got this code diff. Oh, dead code. Do you have any dead code?
Not that I know of.
Okay, well, I'll enlighten you. So this is the query to find dead code if you're interested in this technical stuff. But, and there's some more queries. You'd think this was the answer, wouldn't you? There's the answer. All right. So there we go, and... Do you know these guys? Do you use Reflection at all?
No, a little bit, but not for stuff like this.
Okay. So if you're not using Reflection, you could safely kill this stuff, all right? So can I put that on your backlog?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right, so anyway, you won't use this stuff. Let's just close that and let's go to the tool. When you go to the tool, you get all these windows that do different things. And this thing, I don't know why it shows you all these messages. All you really want to know is the warning. So click off all these messages. It's just noise. So you got that doesn't contain any type. Is that? Oh, that's a JavaScript thing. Okay. So that's fine?
Yeah, that's pretty fine, I think.
You've got no application of third party. You've got two. Anyway, that's the summary. You've got some. We'll look at the tool. Okay. So the first thing I'll look at is this is. Oh, by the way, you know, I used to live on a farm, and you know when you touch the. You know, the wires, and you get the electric shock, which we used to have a lot of fun doing. Every time you touch anything in this tool, and by the way, to get the thing going, you have to click this thing, and these things just pop up over the place. And this is this should be showing me some stuff. Oops, what happened there? Oh. That can't be good. All right. It did, didn't it? Now, that only happens if the code is really poorly written. Okay. So this tool is not good enough to run over your GIMP stuff. It's probably never seen so much JavaScript. All right. So let's do that again. Now, I have used this a lot. That's not very common. Popping up windows all over the place and modal dialogues is common. Crashing isn't that common. Anyway, we'll see how we go. Now, here's pop-up. Now, that's not their tool. That's Telerik's one. I've got so much beta software installed here you wouldn't want to know. But what you'll see over here is you will see all the things that are wrong. So I will... let me just... I think that... I'm just going to run that again because it might... I'll just run the analysis. So we'll start again. And there's my warnings. We've been through that. We can see a number of different. Here's this Rules and Queries Explorer. Oh. Okay. Now that really means you've got problems. Okay. I'm gonna try it once more because I'm very persistent. Now, while I've got you there, do you know what this thing is?
A coconut?
No, it's not a coconut. This I bought at the Great Wall of China just a few months ago. It cost $20 US, and my friend got one for a couple, which I was pissed off about, because I did beat him down from $30 US. But got any idea?
No idea.
So come up here, stand up. You're receiving, and so you'll need. This is a hat. See? Now, what I like about this Chinese hat is like it's like perfect architecture. It like expands to all head sizes. Anything there? And so this is what you want to aim to design. And in fact, it's very flexible. Here, don't go. You can... So that's what I'm very proud of my little thing. I carry that everywhere. I think it's going to take off. All right. I'm going to give this one more go. This is... all right. I'm going to analyze... Oh, sorry. Have I got your thing open? No. Nope. All right. So I'm just going to... This will be worth it. Trust me. Okay? Are you with bated breath here? Okay. So I am going to... That's Telerik. Okay, and that gets an update today if you're worried about error messages. So I'm just going to run the analysis again, and I'm going to close that. And here we have different things, but I'm just going to close that. I don't want to do the same thing I did before. I want to show you the dependency graph. That dependency graph. This is your project. Now, would I be correct in saying, sir, that your biggest code base, or I'll ignore that test thing, is Glimpse Core?
That would be correct.
Okay. So, when he told me he wrote tests, I didn't completely believe it. But you can see his tests are bigger than his core, okay? Which is pretty impressive, actually. Now, don't mind all those windows that keep popping up. That's just a French thing. Okay. You'll... The next one that you have here is this Glimpse thing, and that. So it's interesting to notice. I'm noticing straight away that his tests here. I try not to hover because things pop up everywhere. But that thing in red is, you know, there's more tests than that one as well. So that's interesting. Now I can click on each one and see where the relationships are going. So does this call these other things? Does it call glimpse.core?
I'm pretty sure it does, but it may not have linked it up just because of the project type. So
what's the project type?
It's a MVC project.
So why wouldn't that be calling core if it's calling it?
It should be. I'm not 100% sure. Okay, we'll have to look into it.
All right, so that's one for you. Did you code this?
No, that was John Galloway.
John Galloway. Oh, John Galloway. All right, we'll have to... someone tweet John that he needs to kind of be write a bit of cleaner code. I don't want to tweet it. Anyway. So here you can see we've got MVC... three, and there's my test. So I'll just reorganize that so it's kind of looking like that. Now, there's not much point in reorganizing. You'll keep seeing, you'll keep losing. He likes to change it back how he likes it, so don't stuff with that. But what you can do is you can see there's more... The ratio of test to code is pretty consistent. That's good. Now, if I wanted to do a couple of things, I can hover over these things and see different things. But what I'd like to do is analyze a relationship. So I could, I can analyze this, and you can come in here and, well, actually, you know what I'll do? I'll go from, are you going to be making MVC4?
Yeah, we will be.
And so that'll sit over here just the same as these two?
Correct.
Okay. So what I would probably do at this point, because I just want to know a little bit of stuff, and you can build a graph of code elements in this dependency between these two. So you could do that, and then we can come in here and have a look at what's here. And that tells me the relationship between that ASP.NET and that glimpse core thing. You can change these from members to types and see the data in another way, just with the types. In fact, that doesn't scan. So I think I have to come back. Hold on. And I'll just do that again. Oh, by the way that you scan and do things is you press this refresh thing. So I'm just going to run that again, and now you'll see I've changed that to types, and I can come into ASP Glimpse, and I can build a graph on that, and we'll come in here. Now I can see straight away that this factory thing, it's significant, right? Yes?
Yes, that's one of the largest.
Okay. So we can right-click on this guy, and we can do lots of cool things. So I think we can go down to types and we can say, let's find out all things that are using that directly or indirectly. And then you'll get these, it keeps using this syntax, and this link syntax to find stuff. And obviously you can, you can go through that and have a look at what's being used here. I find these windows annoying. But you can look through that. You can create a export to HTML and see a report on that. Is that interesting?
No more than anything else.
All right, harsh. Okay, so we can come here, export to graph. And now we're looking at this guy. I'll just get rid of that. And now we're looking at what's using this factory thing. So I hope that's interesting. Does that tell you anything? Have a look. You know the code.
I can tell that HTTP modules using factory, and I've got a bunch of tests that rely on it as well.
Okay. So what you can also do, and I'll just come back here and I'll reset that. We could have a look at... if we wanted to stop anybody from having a relationship, let's just say that Mr. Glimpse looks at this and he goes, look, I don't want that relationship. Remember that one that I saw between Windows and data directly? You can actually put this thing in here and you can generate code that warns if that dependency exists. And there you've got it, okay, that style of thing. So that would stop me from implementing that. And so what I'd do now is I'd save that. You know how you have your custom... Resharper rules, this is kind of like the same type of thing. So you save that, and that would be looking for that style from that point. You can also view those dependency cycles on a graph. So what I want to do now is view these on a graph. So I look here, and one of the things that's, now I wish it didn't do this because it's very hard to read. See how that, how hard that is to read? Just click this guy here, and I'll click that, and you'll see this is a bit easier. And what you'll see is you've got bidirectional relationships. So this core framework is your big one, right?
Yeah, inside of this type, in these, that namespace is one of the biggest, yeah.
And this guy is, and this could be good or bad, but you've obviously got this going back and forth. Does this strike you as okay?
I wouldn't have thought so. You know, framework is one, should be bigger. It is a higher order element than extensibility. So.
Okay, so what you can do now is you could say build a graph made of elements in that dependency. And so we could dig down visually and see what's going on there. That's not very... So I will... can I open that? Hold on, I'll open... Okay, so I can open that in a matrix. So he's got all these different views. And now the NAB guy is really confused. So if you look down here, Mr. Glimpse, can you see more red or more blue?
Sorry, not blue.
More green or more blue? That's a trick question.
Green.
Okay. So what that kind of indicates to me, if I want to know what the green and the blue is, so if I could just get rid of those things, if I hover over one of these greens, it says... if I look over on the left, I can see that the core dot framework is looking at the top core dot extensibility. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, and that's what I'd expect.
And that's how he's naturally programmed. He's programmed that, you know, that core framework thing to core extensibility. Now, what is interesting is he's obviously got some things that are going back the other way. So this one. So this would indicate, well. So his evolution has been the other way, but you're seeing, you know, some erosion of that evolution where he's starting to go the other way. So would you think that that might be something worth investigating?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought I'd have that. I must have got lazy at some point.
Okay, cool. So we'll come in here, build a graph of the code elements. That's useless. Okay. Hold on. Let me just... What I'm looking for here is something with a higher number, so there's only one. There's seven. So let's just say he wanted to refactor this and see, you know, if I could get rid of this. Now, I was actually looking for a bigger blue one, but we'll run with that. You can see... no, that's not what I want to show you. Open the dependency. It looks cool. No, but what? Now I remember. I'll go back. Okay, I can look at the direct and indirect depth of use. So you can do that and see this. You can dive into some of this. I'm trying to find a large number here of something.
In the middle there, you've got a four and a three.
Oh, there's a six. Okay, I beat you. All right. So, blue.
You got a blue one as well. Yeah.
Okay, so basically what this tells me is you're going from iGlint runtime down to the serialization converter. And that's the minimum number of paths. So that would that help you in looking at refactoring?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't want that many hops through the through the code there.
Right. So here he is, you know, kind of discovering bits and pieces. And this is kind of the way that you would go through this. But the main thing is that it has all these rules. And the way you get to the rules is we click this guy. You have to know to hover on this red thing, click that guy, and then it will die. Okay. So anyway, you get a bit of a feel. That has a whole list of rules. I could have gone to the website if I hadn't have closed that because I thought it was useless. And it would have showed me things like... Actually, I'll just get it going in the background while I kick over to the PowerPoints. because I want to make sure that I cover a bit of this stuff. Okay, so the next thing I would like to talk about is the amount of documentation. So the amount of documentation, it ranges. Every dev in our company and every client I go to always has a different level of documentation. Some believe in zero documentation, or they certainly practice zero documentation. And other people believe in a lot of documentation. So what I believe that you should do is, you know, decide if you're going to go with the bigger documents, and they have good reasons for having them, or go for lighter, but make a conscious decision. So this is an example from one of my Dutch colleagues, and he does this every time. And he likes to plan out how the interfaces are going to go, and he actually uses a tool called Enterprise Architect. And you're not going to believe it. I was presenting this in TechEd Europe. I didn't even, like, I've seen this tool everywhere I go. I never knew it was Australian. And, because I thought I knew everyone in Sydney. But then I found, yes, I know, I found out it was in Melbourne. Then I was really worried. And it's not even in Melbourne. It's like some, you know, like little town near where Ned Kelly was shot. Or hung, sorry. No, was he shot, whatever. Yeah. So anyway, and you can use this to plan. And the only things that I say when I start seeing this stuff is this gets out of date real quick. Okay, in Scrum we call this technical debt. I really want to know which parts have been done and which parts haven't. So I always think it's important the bits that haven't been done are in red. And it's clear whose area of responsibility these different sections are. So the other thing, more often than not, you see almost zero documentation, or zero. I as a minimum, I think that you should have a document that talks about, one, the technologies that you've got in the project, and I mean, you guys might agree on a dependency framework, you know, the certain core values to the team, it should be in here. But in terms of the business, we should have a business doc. And the business doc should be a couple of pages, and it should explain, from a business point of view, how that project works. Then you have your unit test, which would be another part of the documentation, and then it's the code. So they're the minimum documents I'd be looking for. Business, the compiler, the deployment, and the technologies. Okay? And then you've got unit tests, which is another part of the documentation. But then you've got the code. And many of the pretty senior guys in our company say, look, I'm really just happy with the code. It's good enough. Who's of that ilk? Code is just good enough. Okay, so we've got maybe...
With Java Doc.
Java Doc. Yes. Are you in the right place? So... Who let him in? So the code is definitely the best. Like, you can step through the code and see what's going on, but I like to think of the backlog as also part of the documentation. But that really doesn't work because we create work items and we often complete them in a different manner to how we plan to do them. So this is my advice to you. Turn on the check-in policy, so every time you check in, you're forced to associate the work item. But the work item, if you believe it to be part of the documentation, if you change how you're going to complete that feature or vastly, or at all, really, you update the acceptance criteria. And so as you check things in, you know, if everybody in the team is agreeing, that we don't associate a work item unless we know that acceptance criteria was updated with the product owner, plus the steps that we said we were going to do, we changed them to what we actually did do, which is often very different. Then you've got a new form of documentation that is up to date. All right. So I'm just curious, who goes for the older style documentation, like the bigger documents? Yeah, a few? Yep. And who goes for the very minimal documentation? Right. So... Oh, they're all developers. Okay. So, all right. So, we've talked about some high-level tools. I want to just talk to you about, I'll just recap these things. So you got the architecture, and I showed you that. We've got, I have a dream that basically when you put these guys into different folders, like, you know, I've done here with UI and business and data, that instead of getting this to come out, you'll get this, okay? So put that on user voice, okay? Or tell that French dude. Okay, so put them, put those there. And end-append. Yeah, I've talked to you about end-append and basically how you can go through here and do this. And you can... I'll just see if I can click this. This is not my laptop. And it doesn't... It's a big security risk to open up a JPEG on the internet. Okay. Yes. I don't know how many... You want me to speak to him? So you can look at the relationships, and we talked about that. You can dive down, looking at that, finding out what to refactor. Okay, and I'll put this all up online so you can grab it after. We've looked at that. I chose some different ones in here. All right. So, that's one other thing that I didn't talk about. And I will see if I can get to here. Recent projects, end append, and I'll see if I can get that project loaded. Nope. Not going to happen fast enough. All right. So I want to go through to... So I want to just talk about the common design patterns. So there's a whole series of them, and you can choose what you like, but as a team, I would put it back in that technologies document. And there's millions of them, and this is just an example of just some of them. So that gives you a bit of a scope. There's lots of... But one of the really important things about having these design patterns is... And I often get asked, why do we need to bother with all this stuff? And basically, be aware that if you can agree on certain design patterns, they communicate a lot of information straight away. If you say we're using, MVC with version of control, with, you know, Unity, that type of thing, that you communicate a lot of information to your guys as they jump around projects. All right. So I'll just fly through here. Now, comments. They're another big thing to talk about. But some people say comments are good. Some people say they're bad. I'm of the opinion that that if you see a lot of comments, it's a smell, and that what you want to do is always be making sure that the comments are explaining the intent, and you want to basically be able to read the why down and the how across. That's generally the nice way. This Norwegian guy says that they should read like poetry. Now. I want to show you one other thing here before you go, and that is this code analysis. Now, this guy, I grabbed this, and I'll open them both. Now, this is by a Norwegian guy, and I think this guy is absolutely amazing. And I just want to show you a spreadsheet I took from him, and he let me have it. But this is a spreadsheet that he had on his team. And he has this thing that populates stuff from the database. Okay, he's using the power tools, the TFS power tools. He's grabbing data. Now, in this case, what he's trying to do is encourage all the guys on his team. And I'll see. He's actually got... What is it on the other one? Okay. So he's got these graphs here. And they basically show... And it's hard to... I'll shrink it down a little. But what he's trying to do is encourage all the guys to check in their code without code analysis warnings, okay, and without the code metrics and not being green. So as you can see, you know, he's getting this going well, and he analyzes this per team. So you've got this. Now I just want to show you how things evolved. That's September. This is real data. This is June. So you can see that as he got this team going, and now unfortunately if they do no check-in for the day, they get 0 points. But as he worked with the team, he got them less red. So things were going better. What I thought was amazing was when he told me that when he got to this point, he actually left the team and he went to another team. He thought that those practices, every time they were checking in, they were getting all the warnings away, that they would just carry on naturally, that all he had to do was teach them. And so they, as soon as he left and he wasn't on this project, they went back down. So I thought that was incredible when he showed me this. He was just showing me this out of interest. Can you believe this? And then he went back. And basically, it was only when he was watching them and encouraging them and mentoring them that it went back up again. So, and then he was trying to do it by teams because he didn't want to highlight individually how they were going. I got rid of the Norwegian names. But anyway, that's kind of how that... he explains what the done plus and stuff like that. So it's pretty interesting. All right. Now, so I just want to talk to you about code reviews. The code reviews situation has changed in 2012, and what we want to do is we now have, when we check code in, we have this ability to, instead of checking it in, we can ask for a code review. Now, why that's good is if we want to get to that panacea of continuous deployments of staging, we can't have mistakes. So it's of the, but you can't really have the solution that what I'm going to do is whenever anybody checks anything in, that they're going to, I'll review it. Okay, it's never going to work. It's almost got to be, when I'm unsure, I've written a regex, I need the best regex guy on the team to check it, that style of thing. So what we have now is these new code review tools in 2012, and this is how it kind of works. You know, you're working on something, you can suspend and shelve like you've seen, but we can also not just suspend and shelve, we can also request a review. And I love this feature in 2012, and I think this will form the cornerstone of a whole lot of work behavior changes. So request a review, you enter the guy's details in, who I need to check. Okay, this is going to be beautiful, especially with outsourcing. You enter that in, you ask that I want this code checked. The cranky architect, he'll get this and says, it'll just pop up in his my work page. And then he will click on it and he'll see what the related work items are. He'll see what code changed and he'll look at it before he says that's fine. So he'll look at what the work item says and then he'll open up the code. He'll see the changed code. He will then be able to change it to side by side or in line. And then he will have a look and then he'll start right-clicking and going add comment. And when he goes add comment, he will then say why did you change this? This is wrong, etc. And it'll be, cranky. And then it will positive reinforcement. And then he has to make a decision. Does it look good or does it need work? I wish they had icons here that told me, does with comments mean good with comments or not good? And here's my comments. Anyway, so what it actually means with comments is it's good. So I've actually asked for tick, tick and cross, but didn't make it. All right. So anyway, then the developer will get back, look, that looks good. That's good to go. And that's... that work change, I think, is going to be awesome. I can't wait to start seeing people use it. All right. So it actually forms a shelf. So only the developer checks it in the end. So and he makes the call, but he gets comments. So he can ignore them. He can reply, as you can see there. That I did that intentionally because of this. Because, you know, an architect might say, did you think about this? Did you think about this? Did you think about this? All right. So and then you'll see this. And, yeah, that's kind of when he's finished, he marks that as complete. Or he says, no, that was a horrible idea. I abandoned that. So today we have developers that check things in and then they ask for things to get checked or they ask for people to come over, you know, that type of thing. I would like Microsoft to add one more scenario, which is when an architect is reviewing stuff, he can just put comments wherever he wants. At the moment, it's initiated by a developer with a change set. That completely friction-free thing is not there yet, but I believe that it's coming. Okay. So, in summary, I put all these slides up. There's a lot more. I talked about Solid and all the practices, so you can have a look at the slides. Hopefully, that gives you a bit of an idea of all the steps to go through. In summary, I looked at the first processes, the high-level tools that you can go through, and some of the code review tools you've got there. Fill in your evals. I would love you to email me or tweet me, you know, with what the good tools or tips or ones that you did like or didn't. I run the Sydney user group. Damien, Stephen, Nagy run the Brisbane user group. Sing out and have a conversation. Thank you, guys.